Support is provided by the Lumina Foundation, with a goal to increase the percentage of Americans with high-quality degrees and credentials to 60% by the year 2025, focused on ensuring an accessible, responsive, and accountable higher education system. And by the team at Gelser Investment Management, focused on individuals and families, helping to build, manage, preserve, and transfer wealth for generations, commemorating 45 years in business. Gelser. The opinions and commentary expressed in the following presentation do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, the Economic Club of Indiana, or the Economic Club's agents or sponsors. Welcome to the Economic Club of Indiana. Today's presentation is from Doug Oberhelman, CEO of Caterpillar, Inc.
For many years, when people wanted a figure of speech to question whether a given product or event would appeal to mainstream America, they would simply ask, will it play in Peoria? Well, there is one major company that has been playing quite well in Peoria around the world for nearly 90 years, and we are pleased to have the Chief Executive Officer as the opening speaker for our 2014-2015 Economic Club season. Caterpillar, Inc. is the world's leading manufacturer of construction and mining equipment, diesel and natural gas engines, industrial gas turbines, and diesel electric locomotives. Doug Oberhelman, who joined the company in 1975 after graduating from Millikan University, has risen steadily through the company ranks, becoming chief financial officer in 1995. He became a group president in 2002 with responsibility for Caterpillar's engine and power systems businesses and has lived and worked in North America, South America, and Asia. In October of 2009, Doug was named vice chairman and CEO-elect and immediately began to develop Caterpillar's future strategic plan. Since becoming chairman and CEO in 2010, he has led the successful implementation of that plan. Doug is the chairman of the National Association of Manufacturers, and some may be unaware that Caterpillar is a component of the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Also, some may not know that Mr. Oberhelman is a member of the board of directors of Eli Lilly and Company, or that Caterpillar's major dealer in Indiana is our own McAllister machinery firm out on the city's east side, as there are many other ties to Indiana as well. In addition to playing quite well in Peoria, Caterpillar and our speaker continue to make a prominent name for themselves in Indiana. So it is a treat to welcome to our podium Chairman of Caterpillar, Doug Oberhelman.
Well, thank you, Sherry, for a very kind introduction. I'm always reminded when you mention things like starting at the company in 1975 and all the things that have transpired, I think I'm getting old, and I think I am, to tell you the truth. I'm very familiar with this economic club and various forums and events around the country, and I think it's a great venue, and it's really an honor for me to be here to make an appearance with many great friends of mine that are here, as well as a lot of terrific people in Indianapolis and Indiana. I've spent a lot of time in Indiana, and Caterpillar feels very, very welcome here. It's a good place to do business. It's a good place to improve competitiveness, and we've had great luck with both of those here in Indiana. Before I get there, though, I want to recognize a few people and companies here in the Hoosier State. I want to start with Eli Lilly. As Sherry mentioned, I joined that board in 2008, and I've served in various committees along that time. It's a great, great company with a long tradition of science, of helping people, and saving lives. We meet every other month, and every time I leave a meeting here and go home or wherever I'm going, I leave with a great respect for Lilly scientists and all the work they're doing. It's a very rewarding, rewarding experience for me, not being a scientist, not being even close to the pharmaceutical or medical business. But we talk about saving lives, we talk about new drug treatments, we talk about forward-looking things, investments, and it's a very rewarding, rewarding achievement for that company. Derica Rice is here as CFO, a good friend of mine for many years, as there are others in the audience from Lilly. And Indiana, Indianapolis, and Lilly are very fortunate to have each other. I'm also honored to be spending time in the shadow of Cummins, a great competitor of ours who I've known all of my life, career, working career, and a company that I respect very deeply. I saw Joe and Debbie Locri here a minute ago, old friends from many, many years ago. I know there's a table, and I very much appreciate all of you coming. I would also say Indiana is lucky to have such a great company, global company like Cummins, stationed here in the state. Now, I also want to recognize a dear friend that's here. P.E. McAllister, would you stand up so I can say some nice things about you? P.E. is chairman of the board of McAllister Machinery, which has been the Caterpillar dealer in Indiana since 1945. It's a huge part of Indiana's history and, of course, of Caterpillar's history as well. They have 20 locations and about 1,000 employees in Indiana, and we recently named them our dealer in Michigan as well. McAllister is one of our strongest Caterpillar dealers, and their performance helps us here and surely helps the state of Indiana. Many of you know, I think, in July, PE was named Sachem, I hope I pronounced that right, for 2014, Indiana's highest honor. Earlier this year, he also earned an award for Boy Scouts. I don't know anyone that's more generous, more outgoing, more supportive and inspiring than P.E. He's a citizen we all look up to and want to be. And I will tell you, he recently celebrated his 96th birthday. And having passed 60 a year ago, P.E., I hope I do as good at 70 as you're doing at 96. He was at an event this morning at one of his dealerships, if you can imagine. He's going strong. I hear about him all over the place. Indiana's lucky to have you also, and so is Caterpillar, P.E. Thank you. P.E.'s son, Chris, is here, who is McAllister's president and chief operating officer, the one that's running McAllister day to day. And we're so happy to have you, Chris, and your team that's joining us here as well. I want to get back to Caterpillar a little bit. You may know us as the leading manufacturer of mining equipment, diesel and natural gas engines, industrial gas turbines, and diesel electric locomotives, among many other things. Our global headquarters are in Illinois, but we're proud to have about 3,000 employees here in 7 facilities in Indiana. I'll tell you that our facilities here in Indiana are critical to our company, and I'll talk about them for just a minute. I just learned as part of the research for this speech that Indiana is actually our 4th most populous state in employees after Illinois, Texas, California. So it's critical to us in many ways. First of all, our remanufacturing facility down in Franklin. Bill Roberts is here and manages that facility. At Franklin, we've recycled over 338 million pounds of iron by re-engineering, remachining, and recladding about 400,000 diesel engines and components over the last 30 years, turning them back into something like new. It's a recycling business and sustainable for our environment. Our Muncie facility and 3 other locations are part of our rail business. Jim Shervinsky, Senior Vice President of Engineering, is here today, too. In Muncie, we design and build electromotive diesel locomotives, used in the United States and all over the world. So every time you go by a railroad crossing, I want you to think differently why you're stopped at that railroad crossing. At the head of that train is likely a locomotive built by Caterpillar. And if it's a recent locomotive and looks new, it was likely built in Muncie, the pride of the Hoosier State for us. In East Chicago, Indiana, we manufacture axles and wheels for those locomotives and other railroad customers. That plant came from Ontario, Canada, about 3 years ago and is off to a great start for Caterpillar. Bruce Brenneman is here and manager of our large engine facility up in Lafayette. We've been there since 1982. Today, about 1,800 employees assemble and test our largest engines there, engine used in mining, oil and gas, power the world's largest ships, anywhere where high horsepower, high output is needed. For example, the largest engine we make up there, the 3616, has 16 cylinders, weighs 66,000 pounds, and has maximum horsepower about 6,600. Each cylinder has a diameter of about 11 inches. And there's 16 of them in each engine, if you can imagine. It's a marvel. We wanted to get an idea of our machines up close and personal. On your table is our 793 mining truck. It's a 250-ton payload truck. But the best part of that truck is that engine was made in Lafayette. We shipped them all over the world. We've made thousands of them. They start as an engine, and you may have seen some of that on television, where that engine starts in Indiana and how it gets to an iron ore mine in Australia or wherever it may be. The engines made in Lafayette and the turbochargers are actually made down in Franklin. That's not our largest mining truck. Our largest is 400 tons of payload, and it weighs another 200 tons. So imagine a 600-ton vehicle, not quite a third the size of this room, going down a mountainside in an iron ore mine at 35 miles an hour. Another work of marvel, in my opinion. We've got a big footprint here in Indiana, and that sets the stage for what I want to talk about this afternoon, and that's competitiveness. There are competitiveness indexes for states. Indiana, as you know, ranks pretty high on those, and that's one of the reasons we enjoy doing business here in this state. Every year, the World Economic Forum ranks every country's relative competitiveness, based on variables like tax rates, trade, and infrastructure. But in the end, it's all about productivity and ultimately prosperity. That fits nicely for us because at Caterpillar, we believe decisions are best left to individuals and businesses. And it's more likely that we in the United States will be more productive if we can achieve that. Competitiveness describes the factors that make companies, states, and countries productive. That higher productivity leads to higher wages and returns on capital, and prosperity is the welcome final result. The way I see it, there are three levels of responsibility. First, there's the company level, which is my job and my responsibility as chairman and CEO of Caterpillar. Secondly, there are state and local responsibilities held by governors, state representatives, mayors, city councils at that level. And thirdly, there's the federal government's role. CEOs and the companies we lead are on the front line of competitiveness. We either adapt and change or we perish. For example, we have only a few competitors here in the United States, but we have over 100 in China alone, trying to take our jobs and take our customers. So the first level of responsibility for whether or not Caterpillar remains competitive is mine. And I stand on the shoulders of a lot of prior CEOs over 90 years that thought about that, and I think about that now every single day to make sure we'll be here 90 years from now. And I know the past doesn't guarantee the future, and I feel that heavy obligation to make sure our company is successful for the next many decades. Today, Caterpillar is one of the most recognizable brands. Like I said, we've been in business 89 years. Our IPO, if you can imagine, was December of 1929. Think about that. And all that we've gone through and my predecessors over that period of time. We design and build everything from big mining trucks to very small engines to big yellow construction machines that you may not like very much when you're held up along a detour or a construction zone. Don't worry. I'm applauding in the background for that. I slow down for every single one of those construction zones because I'm counting machines. My wife doesn't like it very much, but that's what I do. I'm the only one going slower than the speed limit. We also have a finance company that has almost $40 billion in assets that we finance our own equipment sales. We've paid a cash dividend to our stockholders every year since our company was founded in 1925 and paid higher dividends for the past 20 consecutive years. Our company hasn't been successful by accident. Like the CEOs who came before me, I have to fortify Caterpillar's four walls to keep us as strong as possible. We don't know what our competitors will do or what unexpected events will come at us. And I, every morning, wake up, I read an internet news station to see what happened overnight that's going to impact me for today, completely out of my control. But by managing the fundamentals, We can put forward our best products and services and let our customers win and beat our competitors. We constantly pull multiple levers to stay competitive, to become and remain the market leader in every segment in which we compete. We're constantly innovating and designing and producing new and better products. We invest in sustainability, both in what we manufacture and how we manufacture it. We make sure our products are reliable and durable, and that when customer needs parts or service, they get it quickly, whether it's here in Indianapolis, in India, or Indonesia, or wherever it is. We've been a global company from the beginning. About two-thirds of our $55 billion in sales today are outside the United States. This year, we'll be celebrating 60 years of Caterpillar in Brazil, and next year, we'll be celebrating 40 years of Caterpillar in China. China is and will be, for a very long time to come, the largest equipment market in the world, so we continue to invest and do business in China. We're also investing in China because we know the best defense is a good offense. Our Chinese competitors are spreading around the globe, and when we win market share in China, we not only strengthen our position there, but we force our Chinese competitors to defend their own territory. This is the same strategy Caterpillar used in Japan in the early 60s, when we established a strong presence there to take on a company called Komatsu, which today is our number one competitor in construction equipment around the world. We took them on their home turf. Today, we're among the leaders in Japan. It's us and Komatsu sharing market leadership in Japan. We're really proud of that, because it's a different model than what happened with the automobile companies in this country, for example. Imagine American companies sharing the lead in construction equipment inside Japan. That aggressive strategy in the 60s and 70s meant we were in a better position to take on Komatsu when they came here, and we did. And we still are the market leader here in America. We're constantly pulling whatever levers we need to pull: strategy, productivity, where we locate, or expand capacity. When we get it right, we employ more people, we buy more supplies from suppliers, and we create more prosperities for families and communities where we live. So where we operate matters. We pick locations based on many variables. Proximity to our customers and suppliers is critical, taxes, regulations, and most importantly, is there a reliable and skilled workforce? We can debate the elements of competitiveness year after year and election after election, but none of these policies or programs will matter if we don't fix our schools. Caterpillar partners with over 30 technical schools around the world. We work with community colleges for skills training and have apprenticeship programs. But in reality, we're just managing around a broken U.S. educational system. We see it firsthand, and it's very, very frustrating. Nationally, now think about this, nationally, we reject more than 5 out of 10 applicants for new production jobs in our factories. Think about that. 5 of 10, basically high school level graduates, we reject for the basics. This country spends about $750 billion a year on K-12 education, and we reject over half for a factory job. In lean manufacturing circles, we would call that waste in the production system of K-12 of almost $400 billion a year. Think about that. We can operate specific programs to fill the skills gap, and we do. We can cajole and complain to officials, which we do. But we alone can't fix this problem. It affects our productivity and U.S. prosperity in every single way. Clearly, high-quality education is essential, and state and local governments must take the lead. This is the most important part of their responsibility for competitiveness. In fact, I think the very core of productivity and prosperity, above and beyond anything else, is education. American public schools used to provide a great education. I grew up, I was a product of a public school. Many of us were. In fact, the one-room schoolhouse educated the greatest generation, P.E. and the one-room schoolhouse put a man on the moon in 1969. And when you think about it even more, we need to be even more concerned about our education system, because after all, I think the only real competitive advantage a company or a country has is the smartness, the intelligence, the ability of its people and how they're educated. Next, when we consider where to locate or expand, we also look at a state's overall attitude toward business. Does it encourage or discourage business? Is it reliable energy and reasonable regulations? Is the state fiscally solvent? It's no secret that I've urged our home state in Illinois to get its fiscal house in order. And I think they can do a much better job over there of being competitive. In fact, I think they could probably come over here and learn an awful lot. And I encourage them to do that. I've had my words with the governor and our leadership over there. You all know what I'm talking about. You see it all the time. Just as I talk about things out of Caterpillar's control that affect our competitiveness, I bet you have a long list of federal government items that hinder or at least affect Indiana's productivity and prosperity. I bet if we compare lists, there'll be many of the same things. Which brings us to the third level of responsibility for competitiveness, which rests in that foreign land I'll call Washington, D.C. Does the federal government, and that means both the Congress and the executive branch, make it easier for companies to grow and hire more people, or do they make it harder? I won't ask for a show of hands. I got a feeling I know which way it would go. We have a significant manufacturing footprint throughout the United States, about 45,000 employees in the United States alone. But because the majority of our business is global, we operate on every continent and manufacture in many, many countries. Thailand, Indonesia, Brazil, China, Mexico, Poland, just about all the big countries we have some kind of presence in. We're seeing that many countries have figured out how the U.S. built its economy in the 20th century and became great. And now they're replicating our success as fast as they can, making more competitors for us and tougher competition. However, it seems while they're moving forward, we're stuck. Washington's failure to act on key economic issues is significantly threatening future productivity and prosperity. While I do my job to try and keep Caterpillar competitive, many states do their job to support business as Indiana does so well. We're still waiting on the feds. We all know the financial crisis significantly changed the economic landscape here. That crisis began 6 years ago yesterday. Lehman Brothers filed for bankruptcy on September 15, 2008. What an infamous day and infamous year after that. 6 years ago yesterday. We all remember that day, and we've really been through a horrible shock in this country, but we rebounded from crisis before. The difference this time is how we responded and how fragile our recovery really has been and is. It's good that our economy is creating jobs again, slowly, but we're still not firing on all cylinders. The real unemployment rate is over 10%, and workforce participation is way down. In August alone, 800,000 Americans were so discouraged they left the workforce. To put that in perspective, imagine every Indianapolis resident over the age of 18 giving up hope that they'd ever find a job. That's what happened in August alone. I think a lot about how different the U.S. outlook would be if Washington was focused on pulling the right productivity levers. The need to fix the current incoherent approach to infrastructure funding is near the top of my list, and probably yours too, although Indiana has a pretty good road program. It's incredible to expect a sustained multi-billion dollar, multi-year infrastructure program to be funded 6 to 12 months at a time. Who would build a house if the bank said, we're going to give you a loan for the basement and the framing, and trust us, next spring we'll give you the loan for the rest of it? That's essentially what's happening to our infrastructure investment in this country. Meanwhile, other countries are investing for growth, like China and Mexico. Two amazing stories here. I was in Beijing earlier this year, and the Beijing governor described the new airport they're starting next year, south of Beijing, which will be twice as big as the one they just finished 5 years ago in Beijing. He was so proud of that, it's going to be the world marvel of all airports. Mexico City, same thing, the largest airport, he said, in the Western Hemisphere and maybe the world to drive regional growth. No talk of new airports at all in this country. In 1956, President Eisenhower and Democratic Congress agreed to fund and build the interstate highway system, truly the backbone of a lot of our growth and development in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. But that was last century. Now we don't have the funding, let alone the strategy or vision, to meet the demands of this century. Second on my list is the failure to act on immigration reform. A modern immigration system is absolutely necessary for U.S. to compete and companies like Caterpillar to remain globally competitive. Some of the smartest people in the world get the greatest education right here, and there are many great universities represented in this room today. I met some of you. But because of our immigration policies, they get to take that great education that we provide and go back to their home countries, and then guess what? They show up across the table from us and compete with us a few years later. We want them on our side, not competing against us. Isn't it fair to expect the U.S. to attract the best and brightest no matter where they come from so we can be the best and brightest country in the world? We don't all have to agree on every point surrounding immigration reform. It's very emotional. But we have to take some practical steps and move forward. This is not a red state or a blue state issue. It's really a red, white, and blue problem we must solve. And we can't seem to get any headway on it whatsoever. To unleash our full economic potential, we must overhaul the tax code. I'm sure you were waiting for me to talk about that. It's currently 4 million words long, and we waste a lot of time and hours figuring out how to comply with it. And I'll quote Paul Ryan, the current code punishes free enterprise and rewards political influence, and it's built up really since the last reform issue in the 80s. In 1966, Peter Drucker talked about how outdated regulations and programs create barriers to new enterprise. 50 years later, the problem's only gotten worse. Last week, the National Association of Manufacturers issued an economic report that put the total cost of regulations in the U.S. at just over $2 trillion, that showed the burden of those regulations hitting small and medium-sized companies and manufacturers the most. I understand and agree that business needs to be regulated, and we need an active government. Those who say there's no room for government are dead wrong. We have to have an active government. But we've invented smartphones, we've invented smart cars, we've invented all kinds of brilliant things. Can't we ask our own government to invent smart regulations that make sense to us all? Why can't our government agencies be as efficient as our best companies? I would hold up Indiana as an example of that. Indiana is one of the most efficient states in services in the country after a lot of reforms and work. Can't we expect our states and our government, federal government, to do the same? And last but not least is ensuring that companies in the United States are able to reach 95% of the world's consumers that don't live here. We're only 5% of the world's population. We've got to figure out how to play with the other 95%. That means supporting trade and bypassing the Trade Promotion Authority and trade agreements in Asia Pacific and Europe. More than 30% of the U.S. economy is tied to trade and investment. Over the past 5 years, Caterpillar has exported over $82 billion of U.S.-made products that have supported tens of thousands of U.S. jobs. Muncie, Lafayette are primarily export factories. Think about the jobs that supports here in Illinois when we are able to reach consumers outside the U.S. Congress also needs to pass long-term reauthorization of the Export-Import Bank so American exporters can better compete with companies from the 59 other nations that also provide government-sponsored credit assistance. We compete with those companies every day that have that advantage to them. Put another way, it's hard to find a time when trade hasn't been more important to this country and to our companies that live here. The world economy is not a zero-sum game. Higher productivity increases the value of goods as incomes rise. Higher incomes then bring greater global demand, and it's a positive cycle that rise to the challenge. The United States government used to understand all this in better ways, I think. The dysfunction now is overwhelming. But as much as I can list all these frustrations, you probably think I've been on a rant up here and there's nothing good I've said, and it's all a problem, there's no hope for tomorrow. That's not true. This is still the world's greatest economy. Through innovation and technology, we drive growth and higher standards of living. I see it at Lilly, I see it at Cummins, I see it at Caterpillar. Innovative companies leading the world the way we should be. We have the greatest secondary education system in the world. Our democracy may be totally dysfunctional right now, which it is, but it's dynamic and resilient, and it will change. The dollar is the world's reserve currency, and we have an established, enforced rule of law. No problem has ever been too big for this country to fix. And we can fix all of this if we take action level by level. For my part, I have to answer to our board and shareholders every quarter and every other month. I can't kick the can down the road or I wouldn't be up here. Indiana understands this and has taken bold steps in recent years. Tough policy changes in education and economic development. It's a bit like how I described our China strategy. The best defense is a good offense. And I think it's past time for the U.S. to go on the economic offense again, over time. I've enjoyed being with you today. I'm going to answer a few questions, and we'll continue on, Sherry. Thank you.
Looks like we've got the questions coming in.
Okay, Sherry.
First, is the United States spending enough in infrastructure improvements to give you a solid foundation for expansion over the next several years, or is the federal budget tightening hurting you?
Well, you're asking the CEO of the largest construction equipment maker in the world. The answer is probably never enough. But in fact, this country saw its spending on infrastructure to its GDP peak in the mid-80s, and it's been declining ever since. And I don't think you have to go very far, whether it's O'Hare Airport. Certainly, I'm always reminded at Kennedy, when you come into JFK from an overseas airport and you're embarrassed about the state of that airport. We're watching right now the Panama Canal just about complete its expansion. As of today, not one port in the United States will be able to handle those giant ships going through that canal. They'll go right past the United States. It'll be a few years before those ports are upgraded. So, and not to mention roads and bridges that we see all the time. So somehow we've reprioritized away from infrastructure, which does a couple of things. One, there's a lot less job creation in infrastructure around the country. But the thing I worry about most comes back to being competitive. And as I watch China and India and a lot of other countries spend a lot more of their economy on infrastructure, that just over time is going to chip away at our overall competitiveness. So I do worry about that. Certainly the federal government budget, a lot of the state budgets are insolvent, and it's hard to pay for this. But we're kind of eating our seed corn, which is probably a good way to say it in Indiana or Illinois, because down the road when we wake up and we need to have that port to export or import, it's not going to be there, and it might be years away before we can recover it. So I think we've really got to think about infrastructure priorities and how we fund that. And there's lots of good ideas around, from public-private partnerships to user taxes on road use. My favorite story is, let's say we're successful in every country, every one of us drives an electric car in the country. The gas tax disappears, but we all use the roads. Who pays for the road upkeep when there's no more tax from gasoline? So somehow we're going to have to find a way to rationalize all that. Nobody wants to pay, but in fact, we'll pay for it in a lot worse way long term than we do short term.
Next question, how does CAT ensure protection of an intellectual property in China and other overseas countries?
Oh, that's a great question, and we do worry that a lot. We've been very, very careful with, for decades, with our intellectual property. We typically will keep our intellectual property in a Caterpillar-controlled facility with a Caterpillar-controlled software system with very tight controls on who has access to it. And we've had pretty good luck with that. We're not in the software business or the movie business that's easy to replicate. I can go to China on any given day and see 60 wheel loaders look just like our Caterpillar wheel loader. But to replicate everything that's inside to make that machine live for 5 years, replicate our distribution organization is very hard to do. Now, a fuel filter, an air filter, a bucket tooth, we see a lot of that. And we punish, or we try to really pursue all of those. We've had good luck with the Chinese government in getting through that. But it's a constant battle and something we have to really worry about. The bigger piece of this that has, I think, all of us worried is cybersecurity and a lot of deliberate attempts to steal not only intellectual property but commercial secrets as well. And that one has really taken off the last 5 years as governments and very sophisticated investors around the world try to hack us all. So those two things are something that are very high on our priority list, and we spend a lot of time worrying about our software protection, our protection of our software that guards our IP.
You guys are doing great on these questions.
That was a good question.
This is a fun job. I got to tell you, I'm really enjoying myself. What role should business play in the participation of educating our high school students?
Well, you know, I'll go back to my childhood in grade school, high school. At that point in time, teachers never had to buy pencils. Teachers never had to buy magic markers. It was all supplied through the taxpayer-funded system that we had. Our third daughter is a school teacher in the Chicago Public School System who has fundraisers herself to raise money for these kind of things. And in her case, there are not many parents around to raise money from. So it's a completely different society today than we grew up in. But the way it's working out is businesses are going to have to take, and we do take, a lot more interest and funding, even as low as grade schools in some cases, particularly around STEM, to make sure we have enough of resources coming up. But it's getting harder and harder and harder. The school system changed, society's changed. And I don't think we've all kept up with the changes out there to make that happen. I see it far too much in our public school systems around this country, and everybody has kind of the same problems. People a lot smarter than me are working on this. There are lots of great ideas, but we can't seem to get the institutional momentum going to make significant changes to help us out. When I joined CAT in 1975, we didn't have any ventures with technical colleges. And today, if we don't, we wouldn't have technicians working for McAllister ready to be trained. We had a lot of farm kids in those days that were fairly adept and had an aptitude around mechanical things. That's all gone today. Imagine that in China, where there's very little history of a mechanical aptitude. So it has to be taught. And it's a big shortage around the world in terms of skills. And today's bulldozer, for example, is a very sophisticated, electronically controlled machine, as is all of our engines. So the first thing you do before you ever reach into your toolbox for a crescent wrench is plug it into your iPad and see what the machine or engine is telling you that's wrong with it. So it's a very different world in which we live, and it's increased the demand for technical skills greatly while our schools haven't kept up. And this is going to be a big issue for this country over the next many, many years, I suspect.
I have a couple of questions around alternative energy and just the impact that it'll have on CAT's future development.
Yeah, alternative energy is important, and we've just introduced our first locomotives that pull a liquefied natural gas, LNG, tank car, and we run the natural gas through these big locomotive engines. And that's a fairly easy application because you can disconnect and disconnect fairly quickly to the fuel source. We're looking at some of that in mining trucks. We've used natural gas and Cummins has too for many, many years in a lot of our diesel and a lot of our reciprocating engines. There's a bright future for that. I'm not one that believes that because of the infrastructure, lack of infrastructure, natural gas delivery around the world, we'll all be natural gas. Every mobile piece of equipment or vehicle will be natural gas, but there's certainly going to be more of that coming. We've looked at all kinds of things like solar combined with a diesel standby generator set in places in Africa where there's a lot of sun. When the sun's shining, you don't need the diesel. When the sun isn't shining or it's night, you want to turn the power on, you have the diesel supply. So there's lots of things coming around that I think technology will really address over the next few years, particularly with the abundance of natural gas that we're seeing coming from everywhere now.
Someone wants to know what keeps you up at night.
Usually when my two dogs start, no. I get that question a lot, and the overwhelming answer for me, and I alluded to it in my remarks, we work hard to make the four walls of Caterpillar, our supplier base and our dealer distributors, very, very hardened. So no matter what happens to us, because we go through these big cycles, no matter what happens to us, we can remain profitable, we keep our credit rating, we keep our dividend, and so on. But the thing I worry about is what I mentioned, that I wake up, I hit my Bloomberg button on my iPad, and I read that Putin has just invaded Crimea. And the next shoe to drop is Ukraine. And then I read about Gaza the next day. And then I read about this, and I read about that. And all this stuff just, all these things just dent confidence in the world economy. And frankly, we're going to have $1 billion less sales this year than last year. And a lot of that is just lack of confidence by all of us that there's a bright future coming. So somehow we've got to get out of that. And who knows, tomorrow it could be something else completely unknown that somebody tries to pull that it involves an economic system or a financial system, and then we go back into something like that. Those are the things I worry about. I have no idea where it's coming from or what it is. And that's why we preach day and night at Caterpillar to fortify our four walls. So no matter what it is, we're ready for it. Let them come on. Whether it's holding more cash on our balance sheet, which we're doing more than we've ever done in our history, or lowest debt levels we've had in history, those kind of things. But bring it on. But I don't know what it's going to be. I feel very good about our four walls. I don't feel so good about this upside-down world around us that kind of spawns things that upset us, a la 6 years ago yesterday, for example.
Well, we are about out of time. You'll be okay. Delighted to know that several people asked when you're going to move CAT's headquarters to Indiana. So
I was waiting for that one. I was waiting for that one.
But I do want to appreciate
I won't answer that one.
Yeah, don't. I'm trying to say
All right, Sherry.
So thank you
thank
so much
you.
For your willingness
thank
to thank come
you
speak
all.
With us.
You've been listening to a speech from Doug Oberhelman, CEO of Caterpillar, Inc., part of the 2014-2015 Economic Club of Indiana Speaker Series. You can find more information on the Economic Club of Indiana at economicclubofindiana.com. Next month at this time, join us for a speech from Anne-Marie Slaughter, President and CEO of the New America Foundation and Professor of Politics and International Affairs at Princeton University. The Economic Club of Indiana is a production of WFYI Public Radio in Indianapolis for Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations. Thank you for joining us. Support is provided by the Lumina Foundation, with a goal to increase the percentage of Americans with high-quality degrees and credentials to 60% by the year 2025. Focused on ensuring an accessible, responsive, and accountable higher education system.